Thank you, Claude. As they said, it's like the number million, billion, and trillion. And with a name like that, you have to be either in sales or population health. And I'm in both. Before I continue on to my presentation, I would like to give you the great fortune of being up at 8:30 tomorrow this morning, so that you will not have to be up tomorrow morning at 8:30, because I have a great recommendation for you. As a native of New Orleans, only removed 5 years, I would like to inform you that this evening, if you take the Green Street car away from here, the Green Street car is the National Historic Landmark. It costs $1.25 perfect change. Go down, it's a nice ride down St. Charles, curve with the river, get off at Oak Street. Oak Street is a nice walkable street. You will enjoy it. Walk down to Jacquimo's. Get there at 5:30. They do not take reservations. Order the alligator sausage cheesecake. Enjoy yourself. Stay until about 9 o'clock. Then go next door to the Maple Leaf, where the Rebirth Brass Band will be playing. Wear your sunglasses, because you'll walk out in the morning. And then you can sleep in tomorrow morning. All right. This said, as a native of New Orleans, it's an interesting thing for me to be back here. It's like Kella landing on planet Earth. You feel like you know a lot of good things and can use your heat vision. When I tell people here what it's like there in the District of Columbia, my elevator speech is that it's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. If you go an hour north of D.C., you're in Baltimore. If you go an hour north of New Orleans, you're in the middle of nowhere. Very similar to the agencies that I'm representing here today, working for the Aging Network. It's a very different world than public health. I came from an organization of health-related people, and now I am the health person within the Aging Network, the National Council on Aging. I'm additionally the senior director of the Self-Management Alliance. Now, as we move through my presentation, I'll explain a little bit about what those things mean. But I'm going to relate a little bit of what Sani said about scale and the projects with which we're working, a little bit. So the NCOA, a lot of people think that it is a federal organization. It is not. It is a national nonprofit. It is not a membership organization. We do support the Aging Network. What does that mean? I'll get to that in just a second here. Nonprofit service and advocacy organization. We cannot underestimate the importance of the advocacy piece here. We leverage both private funding and public funding, and we use the public funding to go talk to government officials. Nothing else. To improve the lives of millions of older adults, a strong social impact piece there. And we have a lot of different projects broken out into two different main areas, healthy aging and economic security. As we look at aging adults and what is needed, those things certainly rise to the top. We have the Center for Healthy Aging, again, the Self-Management Alliance. We try to make sure seniors are aware of the things that are available to them at a federal level, making sure they can sign up for Medicare. Enrollment is now, if you have any parents or aging adults in your sphere of influence, tell them to sign up. A chance to look at how they can make it through their retirement without sinking into poverty. And then, of course, programs to support nutrition as well. I have a hand in all of these, and because I'm such a bleeding heart, I don't do anything else, and I have no relationships to disclose. I work a lot for the Center for Healthy Aging, and we have quite a few different projects that we're doing. One is that we're the National Resource Center for Chronic Disease Self-Management Programs. If you're not familiar with self-management programs, it is a program. It is something out of Stanford University, but there are other self-management programs. They are evidence-based programs, which are now recognized across all federal agencies, including the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. If you go to the communityguide.org, you'll see them now listed with the evidence-based practices with the community guide. If you do not know what the community guide is, go to the communityguide.org, the only part of the CDC that has a name that does not have to mention the CDC, and you'll see some fantastic resources there. We try to make sure that we get as many people in self-management programs as possible to help them maintain some level of independence. We have 22 state grantees that we support, but they are funded by the Administration for Community Living. If you're not familiar with the Administration for Community Living, I do not blame you. It is the smallest part of Health and Human Services. It has exactly one-fifth the funding of the CDC. If you think public health is poor, welcome to the Aging Network. We do strategic and ad hoc technical assistance. There's also a Falls Prevention Resource Center with 9 state grantees and 5 tribal grantees. And they, again, are trying to implement evidence-based practices to prevent falls. And these are things which teach flexibility, which teach managing your space. And they are evidence-based. They've gone through systematic reviews, and they work. We try to make sure that any difficulties in bringing people into these self-management programs have good solutions, program retention, fidelity, to stay close to how the programs were created. Additionally, with the Center for Healthy Aging, we also do a Flu Plus You campaign. A little over half of seniors have a flu vaccine. We want to raise that number. If you've not gotten your flu vaccine at the APHA, shame on you. They should have a booth set up out here. All right, and then the Self-Management Alliance. So, this said, in addition to all these things, we support senior resource centers. We are not a membership organization, though. They do not pay fees. There are accrediting programs for senior resource centers. There are 11,000 senior resource centers. But these things are not huge organizations. Some are sizable, but normally they're cobbled together into a series of senior resource centers with one manager and a lot of volunteers. And then I mentioned the falls prevention. As we look at the funding that's available to working with these programs, we have to pay attention to some really non-conventional things, especially when it comes to getting self-management as part of the health system, partnering with healthcare specifically. And this is the real goal of the Self-Management Alliance. So the Self-Management Alliance was formed in 2011. It is a tri-sector partnership, meaning that it has foundational support or foundation-related support, but also business support, private entities, and also other nonprofits. It is a membership part of the National Council on Aging. That is to say, to belong, you must pay a membership fee. This model has been met with varying degrees of success. Before I get into that, I would like to say that the initial direction out of 2011 was to go toward 8 different work groups. And that was a lot of work. I will say that what was mentioned earlier by Sani around working locally, it's not an unimportant point. I do bring in lessons in my work day-to-day from this book in 1985, and I guess I'm dating myself, called Megatrends. Anybody remember that? Paul John Nesbitt? Anybody remember that? Anybody? Megatrends? Thanks. Trends are from the ground up. Fads are from the top down. And that is a very, very important point, I think. We went after big, big projects, and we realized the more discreet, the more success we would have. We had to go with what was working and the different components of success, and therefore we focused in on an initiative around model communities. I say we. I've been working here for a year. This wasn't me, but I can speak to it. Model communities, though, was an important direction that the Alliance took, developing a detailed description in a multi-site project. Essential and optional features, partner communities within one location and determining the resources and staff and funding needed to undertake a project. So how discrete do we get? Even the implementation of chronic disease self-management education is too broad because there are so many chronic diseases. We actually played with focusing down or grouping chronic diseases. But when you look at a survey that we did recently, we had a listing of at least 22 chronic conditions altogether. And I do mean things like COPD, obesity, arthritis, diabetes, heart disease, etc. And that was a tricky thing to navigate. As we looked at how we could actually move toward the Model Communities Initiative and get it funded, we looked at several different payment mechanisms, including these five, which I'll address. There will be a focus on the social impact investing and what we were able to cover in our deliberations before we're moving on to others that really work toward the healthcare system and partnering with healthcare entities. I think I want to make sure that I mention just how under-resourced the aging network is, and to say that a significant part of the work that we're doing in the implementation of self-management programs is that partnering with the healthcare network and really making the argument for what is the value for self-management. What is the return? I presented at the Patient-Centered Primary Care Collaborative this past week, and I was on a panel of different community-based organization representatives. And I think it was a little shocking to the primary care persons to understand that we were bleeding hearts too, but also that there was a lot of work and a lot of resources into the programs that were available with which they could partner. Because there are a lot of balls that are bouncing around in this world. When we look at the different things working in different communities, we have to consider the cost savings against the different economic things that are happening. Just coming past a recession, and now what do companies do? What's the wisest investment for them? Related to healthcare, the ACA, but even for those that are not implementing the ACA, what are the different things that are happening within states, and how do we make sure that health and health transformation maintains or remains a nonpartisan effort? We pay in this country twice as much as the next largest paying country, Canada, twice as much for the poorest health outcomes in the developed nations. Governmental entities, including federal, state, and local, as we maintain this focus on local, we cannot forget that leveraging state and federal helps get to a certain sustainability. But then last, the patients and the people, aging adults. And the real concern for health care is the patient-centered piece of this. The patient-centered medical home, a quality improvement model, which has a nice standing and is proven to help people with multiple chronic conditions, was a significant piece of leveraging self-management for us. It is in their guidelines and standards, the patient-centered medical home. So we looked at health impact bonds. Now, for those of us that don't have an understanding of what health impact bonds are, let me go back. So in dealing with these different mechanisms, we had to take a look at what we could do to help self-management speak to its success and partner effectively with healthcare, but across different sectors. What this means, what different payment mechanisms are available. Now, grant funding is a good, reliable, well, it's not reliable, is a good, historic, precedented payment mechanism. But there's not a lot of that happening out of the federal government right now. So we had to look at what other things were available. And we ran into a gentleman from Collective Health named Rick Brush. Rick presented at the Institute of Medicine and had a fantastic presentation on health impact bonds, so we brought him to the Self-Management Alliance meeting. The history of health impact bonds goes to a project within the UK funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, or an offshoot, that was initially directed toward recidivism in prison systems. If reoffenses fell, there was a reimbursement on cost of the programs that caused that lack or that drop in recidivism. The difficulty there was the lack of certainty on cost savings over the short term. You had to give the program time to develop. But what caught our interest was the discrete nature of the project, which was reinforced by the experiment in this country, in California. Asthma impact model funded by the California Foundation. I forgot to close parentheses. Reducing the rate of ER visits to 200 high-risk children, 30 and 50% lower hospitalizations, and measured via insurance claims data. They went in and they cleaned houses. They got the investment to clean houses to impact asthma in children, and it worked. It was a small, discrete project with a limited number of people, and it worked. So he came and he told us about some of these things and what could be helpful for the Self-Management Alliance, where we were going and what that meant. And so the important part of health impact bonds, a continuous four-part process: identify, invest, improve, return. Kind of a performance measurement, quality improvement cycle, but very, very discrete. And related to self-management, chronic disease, as I mentioned, was a little untenable, so we started paying attention to falls and what that meant. But there still was the question of what is the role of a national organization related to health impact investments. What role does the National Council on Aging have, or the Self-Management Alliance? We did run into how this would work, leveraging the private investors that were a part of the alliance, but there would need to be a physical intermediary, something which also exists in conversations within public health, and I'll get to that in a second. But it was working with a physical intermediary, bringing the partnerships in private companies together, working toward naming operational funding, but also the infrastructure that exists with public support. And this means partnership with public health that has the measurement capacity. But is the Self-Management Alliance necessary for this model? And that was the question. We found that a national partner would have to have a strong local affiliate that would understand and could bring the partners together and would understand a key issue for that community, such as asthma, with a clear goal. We also found it was important to name what evidence-based interventions would be necessary. And if there's any one thing the national organization could work toward, it was identifying the funding partners, but that specific evidence base. As we look at this payment mechanism, we did look at statutory payment mechanisms as well, usually ACA-driven. CMMI has all these demonstration projects, patient-centered outcomes research institute, community health needs assessments with hospitals, Medicare, Medicaid funding for non-clinical services, for diabetes self-management training, the most successful, that if diabetes self-management trainers go through an accredited program, they could bill for funding from Medicare. That does happen now. And if you're dual eligibles, 9 million dual eligibles in this country, Medicaid could serve as the co-payment. A very important mechanism, hopefully helpful for you. And then the medical loss ratio, ACA-driven. Healthcare systems-related incentives. There's a lot of work on provider incentives with managed care organizations. But the one thing that we're paying attention to are patient incentives, something that we believe will be increasingly popular for young older adults from 60 to 65 going through clinical preventive services, finding your primary care provider, and enrolling and making sure it's clear to your health plan that you're doing that, comes up with incentives. They will pay. Blue Cross Blue Shield has a program that you'll get $650. All right. And then accountable care organizations. I'll just be say, I mean, I think we have enough understanding of that. Accountable coordination, there's a program in Cleveland, Ohio, that really speaks to leveraging the different partnerships across several sectors. Okay. And then last, I don't want to underestimate the importance of private primary providers of healthcare payment, private companies as drivers. And quality improvement, there are different mechanisms set up by private companies to determine what is the quality of different provider systems across the country. The Leapfrog Group is the best example. They do a hospital survey, and they let the employer agencies that are a part of their system know who the highest rated hospitals are. And then those companies go with health plans that have agreements with those highly rated hospital systems, employer-driven. And the last, more recent piece is reference pricing. Important considerations, data. Of all the communities that we looked at, especially for the Model Communities Initiative, the ones that had the information infrastructure were the ones that were the most appealing, that could show and demonstrate the work that had been done and track that. Policy drivers. There's a law for that. There's important considerations at the state and federal level of how policy can work here, especially related to medical billing and the uncertainty and the need for transparency. A law was passed recently in New York that said it's a responsibility of the health plan to coordinate the different services among providers and then to pass the bill on. And then the last, in private-public partnerships, jurisdictional concerns, and again, the importance of that local, discrete identity and the need for physical intermediaries. What I would like to say is the National Network of Public Health Institutes has a paper on intermediaries for public health, because there are statutory concerns for governmental agencies. It's a great paper, nnphi.org. Wow. And I recommend you look that up. Thank you very much.